So when we wanted to start, we had to kind of learn how to do things from scratch here. We didn't have the luxury of hiring a scientist that had worked at one of our competitors that could just come and plug and play. But honestly, I prefer it that way. I think doing things that way and developing something from scratch is just so much more satisfying.
Welcome to the Manufacturing the Future podcast, the show designed to help you future-proof your manufacturing operations. Each episode features interviews with innovative manufacturing leaders and subject matter experts who share their insights and best practices about the technology that can empower you to streamline operations, prepare your organization for what lies ahead, and continue to keep our world turning. I'm your host, Carrie Jordan, Vice President of Product Management at Epicor. Now, for today's episode.
Hi, everyone, and thank you for listening. Welcome to our show where we're talking with the business leaders who are driving the future of technology in manufacturing. Today, I'm speaking with Ario Kashbin, entrepreneur and the founder and CEO of Prollenium Medical Technologies, which specializes in manufacturing hyaluronic acid dermal fillers. What an incredible story of growth we get to discuss. So Prollenium was started in 2002 with just a modest $300 loan, $300 only, and now employs nearly 300 people located in a recently expanded 70,000 square foot facility in Richmond Hill, Ontario, Canada, also expanded to other nearby and international locations, and they distribute their products in over 80 countries. Ario, I'm really excited to talk with you today. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for having me. It's great to be here and to kind of tell you my journey. Hopefully, it helps other entrepreneurs, and if it helps one person, I think that's a great outcome. So thank you for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. And I agree. So let's get to know you. I'd love to understand your entrepreneurial journey and, you know, what led you to start your company?
I think there's been a lot of people asking that question and, you know, why did you decide to do this? And I think I'm a product of my environment. You know, I grew up in an immigrant family and everybody was an entrepreneur around me. So that's kind of what I knew. You know, I think if you grew up in a family of doctors, sometimes you end up going to med school, or I just ended up in a family of entrepreneurs. You know, my mom and dad moved to Canada from Iran in 1979-1980, when there was a revolution that happened in Iran, and my family were members of the Baha'i faith, which is a religious minority group in Iran. It was the largest religious minority in Iran, and they faced a great deal of persecution by the Islamic Republic because we're obviously not Muslims. And they did not like that. It's also a very progressive religion. So many members of the religion had to escape the country and flee the country. To this day, people in Iran, they're Baha'is, they can't go to school to receive an education. They're barred from government jobs, from pensions, from buying land, owning businesses. They're not really recognized as human beings under the Constitution. So many of us escaped, and my parents were lucky to get out when that happened, and they settled in Richmond Hill, actually, where I am now. And when you're in that kind of a situation, you're coming to a new place, it's really difficult to find work in the field that you've been trained in. So like many other immigrants, you end up starting your own companies and doing your own businesses, because that's the only way that you can make a living. So I was fortunate enough to be in a family that was very entrepreneurial. And my mom and dad were always trying different things and doing different things. So I kind of grew up in that environment. My earliest memories, you know, I have memories of my dad. He's originally trained as a chemical engineer, and I have memories of being a kid with him in the basement where he was making creams and different things, and he would sell those. I even remember at one point he had made this Persian hot wax for waxing, and I remember helping him when I was very little label those. And, you know, I always had opinions on the artwork and the branding ever since I was a little kid, just because that's what I was around. So that's the training I kind of received very early on. And when I was probably in my late teens, my mom decided to open a little one-room spa where she was kind of doing manicure, pedicure, and facials. It was really just a tiny little room in a building. And apart from everyone, you know, was telling her not to do it and it would never work. But she was very resilient in her belief that, you know, she could make it work, and that she started doing that. And within a few years, her one room had turned into the whole building, and it had become like a med spa. And that's when I started getting involved with it a lot more and helping her, because I was a little bit older. And that was my first taste of the aesthetics and medical aesthetics. And it was really because of my mom that I got into this space, and she kind of taught me everything I knew about it early on.
What a powerful story, and continuing the legacy of your parents. And I can imagine being, like you said, in that environment that really creates a drive in you.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I tell my kids now, I never really felt like we were poor, even though we were poor. I never noticed it.
Yeah.
I didn't really notice it until I was a little bit older, and, you know, I wanted to get certain things and buy a car and stuff like that, that it really kind of hit me. And my parents had always really worked hard to provide for me, and I'm an only child. And so I felt a huge sense of responsibility to do something with my time and my life, just because of the work that they put in and the sacrifices that they made. It made me feel like I needed to live up to that. So it's a lot of pressure at the same time, but you can't really pick your parents. I was really lucky, and I had such wonderful, wonderful parents that were just always working hard and were very supportive of whatever I wanted to do. They never really told me to go into a specific field or do anything, aside from the encouragement that my mom and dad gave me about really doing whatever I wanted. There was no pressure to do anything specific, which I thought it freed me to kind of follow my passions.
Absolutely. I could absolutely see that. Can you talk a little bit about Prolenium and how did you get that started? And then, like I said, you had an incredible story of growth. So talk about your own, you know, story there. How did you do it? Where did you start and how did you get to where you are today?
Yeah, great question. I mean, it doesn't really seem like a natural jump to go from working in a med spa to doing what I'm doing now, but it absolutely was. I was working in my mom's med spa, and quite frankly, the first thing I saw was the amount of excitement and demand from customers that wanted to have treatments done. And I thought, you know, this is pretty interesting. I mean, people are really, this is growing. You know, I just saw the rapid growth in my mom's business. And to me, that was a sign of, you know, this is a good area to get into.
Yes.
And I was working with her for about 6 months, and we're very similar personalities, and we were, you know, butting heads because I was very opinionated about the way she should be running her business.
Oh, no.
And she's very opinionated about telling me the way that it should be run. So I decided, with her blessing, obviously, to go out on my own and start my own company. And originally, I just wanted to build it around medical aesthetics because that's what I knew from working with her. And I tell young entrepreneurs all the time that it's not easy to come up with an idea of what you want to do. You kind of have to get out there and work a little bit to figure out what's going on in the world. And that's how doors open, really. And that door, the door that opened for me was my parents and my mom getting into this spa business. I knew that I didn't want to be in the retail side of it just because I saw how much work there was dealing with the customers on the retail side. But I really liked the distribution and the manufacturing side of it. So early on, I decided to get into the distribution and sales of equipment for laser hair removal and facial rejuvenation. So I reached out to a company in California called Laserscope, and they were kind enough to give me the distribution rights for the Canadian market. And that's kind of how the business really started for me. Previous to that, I spent about 6 months just cold calling a doctor's office, trying to figure out what they were interested in and what I could sell them. And that's kind of how I got to where I was with the distribution of the laser equipment. So I did that for about 2.5 years. And at that point, once I got the distribution, one of my best friends, Kasha, that we had grown up together, I invited him to come and work with me. So we started working together, and we sold quite a bit of the laser equipment. We saved up our money. And at that point, we really wanted to get in on the consumable side, because when we were visiting a lot of the clinics, we noticed that the dermal filler sales reps were having a much easier time selling that product than we were selling our capital equipment. So we wanted to get in on the consumable side of the business. So we pivoted into fillers in 2004. And at that point, we started working with a company in Europe that was private labeling for us. So with our branding, and that's really how we started in fillers.
That's great. So what kind of technologies actually do you use in your business now? On the show, we like to explore the different types of, you know, manufacturing technologies, and it could be digital technologies. It could be perhaps manufacturing facilities that you leverage. What are you looking at today when it comes to how you're managing your products?
That's, That's a great question. I mean, when I started, I knew nothing about the manufacture of dermal fillers at all. So I didn't know. I mean, if you looked at me and asked me a question about it, I wouldn't know anything. But my journey was actually kind of interesting because it started with quite a bit of failure. We were working with a company in Europe that was producing for us, and that product was absolutely terrible. And it was really the drive to figure out what was wrong with that product that led us into manufacturing our own product and doing the R&D around it. So when we started, you know, and to kind of get to your question in regards to what equipment we're using and technology we're using, we really had to figure it out from scratch. We'd never done it before, but it's making a dermal filler in many ways to simplify it. It's very similar to baking a cake. I mean, it's a recipe that you have to follow. The only difference is that you got to do it in a clean room because it's an injectable medical device. So very early on, we had to learn about clean rooms and what type of clean room we needed, the quality system that had to go with it. I had to learn all about that and pretty much put together a quality system that I managed first few years of the business because we just didn't have anybody else to do it. You know, setting up a clean suite, a mixing equipment that you would need, an autoclave to sterilize, and lots of other equipment that we couldn't actually buy that we had to build to suit what we were doing. So I studied business in school, but I can tell you that I was educated 100 times over in building this company just by learning all the things that we had to do to get to where we are. But it's been so much fun because the journey has led me to discover all kinds of things about science and chemistry that I had no idea about. And in fact, I was never really interested in school. You know, I was more interested in the business side of it, but now I'm kind of interested in all of it. So it's led us to kind of learn about all the different equipment. And that's one of the things, you know, for entrepreneurs, it's like you have to be ready to get outside your comfort zone and really learn about things that you have no idea about if you want to make your business work.
It's so inspiring because it does seem out of reach. But as you said, if you just focus in, you have the drive to learn and you just dig into it. Right. Seems like you could figure it out. I'm sure it wasn't easy though, Ario.
Yeah, no, but you know, I will say, I think anybody could have done what I did. There's a few factors. One of them is obviously the time and place. The circumstances are really important, you know, but it might not be fillers. It might be something else. But I think the important thing is the mentality that you have.
Yeah.
If you approach things in a positive way, the glass half full mentality, where you look at a problem in need of being solved and you look to solve it, I think you can really accomplish a lot of these things, whether it's on a grander scale or smaller scale, but it doesn't really matter. It's really about the thought process behind it and the thinking. So a lot of times I tell people, it's good to be young and stupid and naive, because the older you get and the smarter you get, you kind of talk yourself out of doing things because you look at all of the risk and you're a little bit jaded the older you get as well. So I think being young and naive and having nothing to lose is a huge part of being an entrepreneur, because it allows you to take risks that you might not take if you got, you know, three kids and a mortgage. So I was lucky. I was just kind of at the right place at the right time. I had so much support from family. I didn't have to worry about paying rent. I was living at home at the time. I didn't have kids. I didn't have a mortgage. So it's a lot easier to take chances when you have nothing to lose. So I encourage people to, if they do have dreams of becoming an entrepreneur, to start young, but it's never really too late if you have support.
Yeah. Now, I imagine dermal fillers have, as you mentioned, a lot of science and chemistry and these kinds of things that regulate. But I'm just curious, before we get to that aspect, did you incorporate anything from your family or your culture or your background into your business? You know, you talked about the recipe. I'm just curious, you know, how did that influence your business or product?
I'd like to think that everything that I do is a testament to my parents and the environment that I was brought up in. I like to think that I'm a product of what they instilled into me. And so I try to, a lot of the things that they taught me, I try to run my business like that. And one of the things, especially with my mom and dad, is they just treated everybody with so much respect and dignity, regardless of where they were on the food chain. Whether they were, you know, someone who just started or they were someone more senior and executive, but they just treat everybody with such a great deal of respect and like family. And I try to run my business like that now. I feel like if you have an open door policy like that, where people can come to you and they feel like their work is valued, whether or not they're mopping the floor or if they're the CFO of the company, they have the autonomy and they feel like their work is valued. I feel like you can really build a strong, unified workplace with just simple principles like that. So it doesn't need to be complicated. You don't need an MBA to do it. I just think you just have to treat people the way you want to be treated. And I think a lot of companies forget that.
I totally agree. You know, when I'm, you know, having conversations with business leaders such as yourself about technology, we almost always, actually, I should say, we do always talk about the power of the people that you bring into your business, those that you entrust, and how you empower them. That's what really makes or breaks a business and can be the difference between, you know, just slow growth or rapid, incredible growth. So speaking of your team members, do you have any technologies that you leverage to support that unification, maybe sharing information, empowering them on a day-to-day basis so they have maybe a safe working environment, you're complying with the regulations I'm sure you're subject to? What kind of technologies do you leverage to empower them?
I mean, absolutely. We actually, in regards specifically to employees, I never really had an HR department before the last few years. So with an HR department, you know, there's so much to manage when you have 300 people working with you. And one of the things we've done is we've implemented some HR software, and that's been a huge support for us and the staff, just to be able to help us manage, because, you know, each person has different needs and wants, and you have to make sure that they don't get orphaned or ignored in their work. And I think the software has really helped us build our team. And the other thing is we've been using a lot more of survey software and things to do surveys with the staffs, just to make sure that we get a feel and an understanding for what they want. When it was a smaller company, I could take the pulse of the way people were feeling pretty easily just because I'd walk around the office. But the bigger you get and the more people you have, really you need to lean on some form of HR software to do that. I mean, as well, probably about 10 years ago, we implemented an ERP system that was long overdue. And that was because we had some theft happening within the company. So we needed to obviously use technology to help us manage and track inventory so that we didn't have that problem again. And also we've had quite a bit of software that's been put into the company in terms of our sales team, but also a CRM software. So, I mean, we're using it really everywhere and all the time, including in manufacturing. We've got lots of software to automate our processes and our procedures, because again, it is a recipe, and you know, humans can make human error, but software can really help you make sure that that error is minimized.
Yeah. When you go to add a new technology to your business, what are some of the things that you consider? I'm imagining working with your team members to ensure that it's going to fit their business process, that they, you know, get to experience the user experience before they choose. Just what are some of the things that you like to do as part of your decision process?
Yeah, I mean, our process here is really, it's a needs-based process, but the number one factor is usually becomes budget, I think, a lot of the time, because, you know, a lot of these technologies are very expensive and you have to make sure that you really need them before you jump in, because the cost can be pretty prohibitive. But you reach a certain point where you can't really live without them. And I think at the end of the year, when we're going through our budgeting process, we try to listen to all of our department heads and what they need to better their departments and to make sure that everything's running smoothly. And then we kind of do a needs assessment in that way based on the department and where it kind of fits in the hierarchy of our needs. But we try to listen to our executive team, and we try to look at it in that way just because we want to make sure that things are always clicking and running smoothly.
Nice. That makes a lot of sense, because then they're a part of that process and they have a voice in what is invested in. Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. Can I ask you to pick a favorite? If you were to look out at your business and whatever technology has had the best impact or the greatest impact, do you have a favorite? Which would you choose?
We're a bit of a unicorn in the sense that we only really have one product line that we manufacture right now here. So the product line that we have is called Revenes, and it's a family of products within that range. So, I mean, it's my favorite by default because it's the only one we have. But the product that we started with that really made a lot of headway for us was Revenes Ultra, which in the United States is called Revenes Versa. It's our number one selling product, and it's kind of the workhorse in the line. Yeah.
That's great. So I was looking a little bit about your business, and I saw that you are the first Canadian company to open a manufacturing facility specializing in dermal fillers.
Right.
How did that come to be? I mean, and how has technology helped you in that process?
So, I mean, all of the manufacturers in this space are in Europe, and a lot of the products on the market are, you know, European, and they're from really, if you follow the roots of the product, they all go back to like one or two companies, and, you know, they had one guy leave and start his own. So the technologies are all really similar, but, you know, obviously I'm not from Europe and I didn't grow up there. So when we wanted to start, we had to kind of learn how to do things from scratch here. We didn't have the luxury of hiring a scientist that had worked at one of our competitors that could just come and plug and play. But honestly, I prefer it that way. I think doing things that way and developing something from scratch is just so much more satisfying. You don't really make the mistakes that other people are making, and you can, you know, learn, make your own mistakes, or you can look at a product, reverse engineer, which is what we did, and try to figure out how to make everything better. And I think if we would have started in Europe and another place, and we would have just hired somebody that had worked somewhere else, we would have just had a copycat product in that sense.
Good
point. I think it was a blessing the way that we grew up and built our product. And for me, it was so much fun because I was involved from the very beginning with every step of the manufacturing production. And I learned so much in that process. And I think so did our team. Going through it really made us experts in the fields. And I think that's something that you can't take for granted. A lot of times, you know, I think people want to skip steps. Like, you know, if you can hire somebody that knows how to do it and they can just plug and play, it's nice. But, you know, all of the things in the middle, you skip those steps, I think you're doing a disservice to yourself because you don't get to go through them and learn them, right? It's almost like if you're a musician and you don't have to play all those crappy concerts with nobody in the audience for years before you make it big, you know, you lose out on that experience where you can really refine your craft. And I think that's what we got to do being the only North American manufacturer, is we got to learn and make mistakes, improve, do things that other companies might not necessarily get the chance of doing if they just copy something else.
You're right. And I could imagine, I mean, that is so painful to go through a process like that, but so rewarding in the end once you do.
Yeah, absolutely. I look back on it. I tell people some of the most fun that I ever had was during that process, you know? The heartbreak and the success, the victories that you have during that, it's just the highs and the lows. It's amazing. You know, and it's stressful, but it's amazing. And it just gives you such a sense of satisfaction when you can get out over on the other side of it. So I appreciate all of those things. And I think it's really a part of being an entrepreneur.
Mm-hmm. I agree. So changing topics a bit, thinking back to technology, when you are looking out to the future of your organization, what's next? What are the trends that you're excited about?
That's a great question. I think a lot of times you can really get stuck when you're doing something, right? You lose sight of what's next. Mm-hmm. Because you're so fixated on what you're doing that you don't think about the future. And one of the things that I really, really enjoy, and I've always enjoyed it, is product development. I think if I was to choose one thing that I wanted to do, it would be work on new products, because I think it's the most exciting thing to do. So from my side, I want to make sure that we remain an innovative, cutting edge, open-minded company. We don't get stuck on what we're doing. I think it's really easy when you have a level of success with a product to kind of get stuck on it, mm-hmm. and not really look at what's next and keep your mind open. There's so many examples in business. I mean, one of them is a Canadian company, BlackBerry, where you come up with a great product and then, you know, you just kind of get stuck and you don't think about what's next. And somebody comes in and does it better than you, or comes up with something new, and you're just left behind. And I really want to make sure that doesn't happen to us. So one of the things that we do is we continually invest in R&D. We have a full team of R&D scientists here, and a portion of our budget every year is allocated towards R&D. And I'm always pushing the team to come up with what's better. Is there anything better? Are we missing anything? You know, is there a product? Is there any way to improve our products? And so if you have that continuous learning and improvement culture, I think you can get ahead of those types of changes.
Yes. Yes, I agree. Thinking about the other entrepreneurs out there, other business leaders, I feel like you've already shared some really great advice. Anything else that you would pass on to them?
Yeah. I mean, I think if you're really passionate about what you're doing, stick to it. Doors will open. It might not be a door might open for you, and it might not be what you initially were looking for. But I think as long as you're moving forward, opportunities will come. So my advice to young entrepreneurs is don't give up, you know, stick with it. And remember, humility is one of the most important things in this area. you're always going to need to stand on other people's shoulders. And I think this whole idea that people do things on their own is a bit of a farce. Mm-hmm. The idea that people kind of bootstrap it and build things on their own, it's a nice idea, but I just don't necessarily think it's true. I think everybody needs support and everybody needs, you know, shoulders to stand on. Everybody needs someone to lean on. So there are people in your life that can support you and help you. And I think it's important to look out for those people and ask them for their help when you need it.
Yeah, that's great. All right. This is such a great conversation. It was so inspiring.
Thank you. It was a pleasure to be here. And thank you for your time.
Absolutely. So as we wrap up, for anyone who wants to learn more about Prolenia Medical Technologies, or if they want to connect with you, where would you direct them?
We have a website for the company, which is prolenium.com. And also the product is revinets.com. There's a website for that. And personally, I'm on Instagram and LinkedIn. So if people, it's just my name. If people want to find me and reach out, that'd be great. I appreciate that.
Great. Thank you so much, Ario.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Thanks so much for having me, Carrie.
Absolutely. That was Ario Kashvin, entrepreneur and founder and CEO of Prolenium Medical Technologies, a manufacturer of hyaluronic acid dermal fillers based in Ontario, Canada. And to everyone listening, thank you so much for being a part of the future of manufacturing.
Thank you for listening to Manufacturing the Future, brought to you by Epicor. For the latest episodes, search for the show on your podcast platform of choice. Make sure to subscribe to get notified when a new episode is released. To learn more about Epicor, visit epicor.com.